Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the reading of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 7th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading with an article headlined, Decatur Hospitals Stand Ready Against Tornadoes. This was written by Emily Steele. When the tornado sirens go off, people know to seek shelter in a basement and away from windows, but that option isn't always available inside a hospital. The windows are large, patients can't move themselves, elevators aren't an option for those on top floors, and visitors don't know where to go. During tornado season, Decatur's two hospitals are especially at risk when storms hit the area, so staff constantly monitor local weather and regularly revisit and practice their emergency plans. We do drills at least twice a year for any number of hazards, said Cindy Jenkins, the Director of Regulatory Compliance, oversees emergency preparations at Decatur Memorial Hospital. DMH and St. Mary's Hospital follow a similar system of announcing severe weather watches and warnings through the hospital overhead or through the computer system. Staff, some of whom are storm spotters, will also decide based on the storm's location if a hospital-specific tornado warning is needed. That's when people know, okay, this is serious. We have to jump to action, Jenkins said. Bill Wood, St. Mary's Emergency Medical Service Coordinator, has 6 radios in his office connecting him to other hospitals, storm spotters, and emergency agencies. He also gets weather alerts on his cell phone, and several outside agencies will contact him during severe weather in a system that is meant to be redundant with built-in backups. He monitors radar during severe weather and decides if St. Mary's is in a storm's path. We've had to make that call several times in the past, Wood said. We've had some near misses here. He referenced the April 1996 tornadoes that came through Decatur that barely missed both hospitals. The twisters injured 62 people and left behind millions of dollars in damage. Buildings with large concentrations of people in small areas, such as hospitals or schools, where people can't escape quickly, need to take extra care, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Hospitals nationwide learn by example when the hospital in Joplin, Missouri, was hit by a tornado in May 2011. Some hospital departments are naturally more protected than others. For example, most intensive care unit rooms at St. Mary's don't have windows, and neither do the operating rooms at DMH. But in other rooms, curtains are closed and staff move patients and visitors into inner hallways. Those who can't be moved quickly are covered with blankets and towels. However, the lobbies with large walls of windows and numerous visitors are especially vulnerable. When we get a warning for St. Mary's, we have minutes to respond, Wood said. Sheriff's Lieutenant James Root, the Macon County Emergency Management Agency Coordinator, said the hospitals are on the list of agencies he deals closely with before and after storms. If the National Weather Service holds a severe weather conference call, a sign of possible significant damages, representatives from the hospitals are included. So they're getting the first-hand knowledge of how bad the event will be, Root said. No one likes to think of what would happen if a local hospital were hit, like Joplin's Hospital, but staff members are prepared for the worst. If we were to get hit, we could have a tent city set up outside within 3 hours, Wood said. Ambulance traffic would be redirected, backup generators would kick on, oxygen lines would be shut down, and first responders would focus efforts on the hospital, since it's considered critical infrastructure. Jenkins said healthcare providers will always step up during an emergency. It's because we drill, but there's also the type of people who work in hospitals and who are drawn to this vocation, she said. They want to help. That's what they do. Here is an Inset article titled simply Response. Severe Weather Chain of Response. Hospital staff monitor local weather constantly through TV, weather radios, smartphones, and online weather radars. A severe weather alert goes out. A hospital-wide audio or digital announcement is made. If it's a tornado watch for Macon County, window curtains are drawn and other preparations are made. Staff continue to monitor the storm. If it's a tornado warning for the county, people are moved away from public areas with glass. Using radar and storm spotters, staff decide if a hospital-specific warning is needed. If the tornado is in or moving toward a hospital, a tornado warning is announced. Depending on the department, patients, visitors, and staff are directed inward, away from exterior windows. Patients who can't be moved are protected with blankets and privacy curtains until the warning expires. A photograph accompanying this article pictures the communications room at Decatur Memorial Hospital with several computers and television sets and people monitoring those. So this room monitors radar and alerts the campus if there is an emergency weather situation. In the picture, we see Molly Osborne Temple and Michelle Dunlap. We continue with local news. This article is written by Allison Petty, and the headline is Library's Space Sharing Plan Cloudy After City Council Meeting. The future of a plan for the Decatur Public Library and Macon County offices to share space appeared murky after a lengthy discussion by the Decatur City Council. Several council members ended the 3.5-hour meeting Monday by commenting that they still had many questions about the deal, under which the library building at 130 North Franklin Street would be sold to the Decatur Public Building Commission. Mayor Mike McElroy indicated preliminary support for having the city buy the library building instead. I believe the taxpayers of Decatur are who I represent, and I think the best representative of that is if we would purchase that property, he said. The council members did not reach a consensus and directed City Manager Tim Gleason to present more information about various options at the council's next meeting. Gleason did not offer a recommendation and repeatedly emphasized that he wanted to make sure the council had all the facts. Boards representing the library, county, and building commission approved the agreement over the past 2 months. They have been in talks for more than a year, and the plan became public in November. It was initially unclear whether the council would need to approve the deal. Gleason, who started as city manager March 23rd, also told the council members that they have the first right to purchase the library building under state law. Following the meeting, Library Board President John Phillips said it was hard to be overly optimistic about the proposal's chances of survival. Earlier in the meeting, he presented information about the structure of the deal and the Library Board's reason for pursuing it. One of the biggest positives, he said, was that the Library Board would not come back to Council seeking money for capital improvements such as a new roof and repaved parking lot. Phillips estimated that the library building will need $5 million to $8 million worth of improvements over the next 20 years, which would be the length of the lease with the Building Commission. "Please do not let this become one of Decatur's missed opportunities," Phillips said. "It is there for the taking." Under the plan, the Building Commission would buy the library building for $3.1 million. Instead of paying the library a lump sum, the commission would essentially pay for the building by giving the library a break on its rent, keeping the rate $615,000 annually for 20 years. County offices would move into unused space on the library's second floor and in its annex building. The Macon County Office Building at 141 South Main Street would be sold to 101 Main Place, LLC, with the intended purpose to redevelop the building for residential use. The Illinois Local Library Act gives library boards the power to sell property deemed no longer necessary for library purposes and to lease property that is not immediately useful but for which there might be future plans. However, it says, quote, "The corporate authorities shall have the first right to purchase or lease," end quote. Greg Ciantera, the city's finance director, told the council that the library building is recorded on the city financial statements as a city asset valued at $4.1 million. However, the library's board of trustees holds the deed. Also, the city still owes about $735,000 in principal, a $5.2 million general obligation bonds that were issued in 1998 and refinanced in 2010. To pay off the debt, the city is scheduled to pay $255,000 this year, $245,000 next year, and $235,000 in 2017. Citing city records, Ciantera said the bonds were issued to purchase and renovate the library facility. Phillips said the bonds were used for renovations and that the library board purchased the building. In any case, the outstanding debt appeared to concern several council members. "Right now, this is a win-win for the library and for Macon County," Councilwoman Dana Ray said. "I want this to be a win for the city." Councilwoman Julie Moore Wolf agreed. She said it made sense for the county and library to share the building, but that the deal needed to be a win for everybody. "I just don't want our taxpayers to be left paying for something that we no longer have any say over. Something's not right about that," she said. McElroy acknowledged that the library building needs improvements, but said Decatur's climate is one of growth. "That building's going to be worth something 20 years down the road, 15 years down the road," he said. Councilman Bill Faber appeared to offer the most support for the existing proposal, saying the city must be willing to be innovative and flexible in its approach during difficult financial times. If something seems a little unorthodox, but it portends well for the future, we should not dismiss it just because it's unorthodox, he said. In a separate matter, the council approved appointment of three new library board members, Michael Sexton, Aaron Largent, and Zian Terra. They replace members whose terms have expired. Faber was the lone no vote. He objected to Zian Terra's appointment, saying the library board is meant to function as an independent body, not to serve the interest of city officials. When you have an official with such commanding authority and such influence in the city, I feel it would perhaps inhibit or sway discussion of the library board that might otherwise flow in a different direction or more freely, Faber said. He added that his objection was not personal, and he thought Zian Terra could serve as a valuable non-voting advisor. McElroy refused to reconsider Zian Terra's appointment, calling him an honorable man and everything the council could ever ask of an employee. Quite frankly, with the nice crowd that we have here tonight, that may have been avoided had information gotten into City Hall a little bit more, he said. Chris Lusfardi submits this article with the Dateline Forsyth. Hobby Lobby opens doors at Hickory Point Mall. And there's a photograph of a very large store and an employee, Marilyn Deluge, who works with an upholstery display during the opening of the new Hobby Lobby at Hickory Point Mall. And here's the article. Denise Johnston has kept an eye out for when the new Hobby Lobby store would open at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. After finding out when the opening would be, Johnston was eager to be one of the first shoppers through the doors when the store opened Monday morning. Hobby Lobby sells a variety of paper for cards Johnston likes to make, so she said it will be worth the drive to the mall from her home in Bethany. I've been watching when I've been driving by, Johnston said. It's really going to add to this area. It will be great. In moving from its former location on Pershing Road in Decatur, the store at the mall gives Hobby Lobby the additional space it has been seeking, store manager Jack Mead Jr. said. The mall store features 63,000 square feet of craft and home decor items, which Mead said is about 20,000 square feet more than the old space. The Oklahoma City-based retailers, more than 650 stores across the country, average about 55,000 square feet. We needed a bigger store, Mead said shortly after the new store opened. We're happy to have a big store. More than 70,000 products are sold in each Hobby Lobby store. Its departments include floral, fabric, needle art, custom framing, baskets, home accents, wearable art, arts and crafts, jewelry making, scrapbooking, and paper crafting supplies. Plus, some items vary by season, as just 2 days after the 4th of July, shoppers could already find Thanksgiving and Christmas products for sale in displays just inside the front doors. We're ready for the next season, Mead said. It makes sense for crafters. They're making things in the fall. The store has more space than before to display products, such as furniture, and shelves have been added to more conveniently show home lighting options, Mead said. Shoppers can reach the store from either inside the mall corridor or outside from the northeast end of the parking lot, as the hope is to draw more traffic to all the stores at the mall. It benefits both of us, Mead said. Hickory Point Mall General Manager Kathy Meter said Hobby Lobby has a different mix of products than what shoppers usually expect to find at an anchor store. She said construction moved smoothly and they're excited to have it open. It's a lot of square footage for the mall, so it will be one of the larger draws, Meter said. I think the community's excited about it as it's a new, neat look for customer shopping. The new Hobby Lobby store was built in part of the space JCPenney formerly occupied before closing just more than a year ago. Another of the shopping center's anchors, Sears, also closed last year, but that space remains vacant. Meter said the Sears space remains part of the center's redevelopment plans, but nothing has been finalized. Hobby Lobby will be open 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Unlike other stores at the mall, the Hobby Lobby in Forsyth will be closed Sundays, like all of the retailers' locations. In addition to Hobby Lobby, other stores are moving in elsewhere at the mall, and Auntie Anne's Pretzels opened over the holiday weekend. These two great additions to our center give our shoppers even more reasons to find everything they need at Hickory Point, Meter said. Auntie Anne's is known for its warm, freshly baked pretzels served right out of the oven. Its pretzels are served with mustard, along with sweet and savory options. In addition to its menu that includes pretzel dogs, cinnamon sugar, pretzel bites, and more. Auntie Anne's is in the center court near Von Maur. Another new store is drawing closer to its opening as Dr. G's Brainworks is in the hiring phase. Hickory Point Mall will be its third location, featuring various games aimed at early childhood development through seniors that test problem solving and critical thinking. The next article has a caption entitled Heroes, and the article is headlined DISC Campers High Five Their Heroes. This was written by Allison Petty. Everybody needs a high five now and then, even heroes, maybe especially heroes. That was the thinking behind a new project undertaken by the Decatur Indoor Sports Center, Day Campers, who used a combination of paint, construction paper, and markers Monday to send colorful notes of appreciation to heroes of their choosing. Some kids wrote to people they knew, family members with daring professions, or other admirable qualities. Others wrote more broadly to a category of person, with day camp director Kristen Murray promising to make sure the letters reach their targets. The kids also asked the recipients to write back, sending a handprint of their own. Dear cops, wrote 7-year-old Addison Hodge, thank you for saving us. I think you are very awesome. Addison said she enjoyed painting her handprint on the construction paper that contained the letter. She chose to write to police officers, even though she does not know any personally, because they protect people from being injured. She also wrote a second letter to her uncle, who served in the Marines. Zoe Cummings also wrote to her uncle, Bill McCarty, who she said serves in the Army. "Thank you for being brave and serving the country," wrote Zoe, who is 7. Other chosen heroes included firefighters, lifeguards, and even animal shelter directors. "Thank you for caring and loving all the homeless and abused pets and animals of all kinds, no matter what," read one letter. Tamarian King, age 10, decided to write to soldiers, thanking them for being brave and fighting away the bad guys. Another of his heroes is his 18-year-old brother, Traylon Fuller, who he said has saved him twice, once when he was trapped in an airplane bathroom, and another time when he was close to being stuck under a garage door. "A hero is a person that does good things, but a hero doesn't always necessarily save people," he said. "Most likely, they help people." A photograph accompanying this article pictures Chloe Mooney, age 7, who writes a thank you letter to her uncle for her high five, a hero project during DISC day camp at Kiwanis Park. Her uncle is a firefighter. And there is a picture of the article written on pink construction paper, and the writing is in dark brown. "Dear Uncle Robbie," it reads, "thank you for putting out the fires. I think you are very awesome. One thing I like about your job is you save lives. Can you please send me a letter?" And she signs it, Chloe. We'll turn now to some letters to Dear Abby. Here's the first one. "Dear Abby, my boyfriend Blake recently broke up with me again. He told me in the beginning that he was bi-curious and that he wasn't sure he was completely heterosexual. When he broke up with me the first time, we stayed friends. Everyone seemed confused that I still wanted to hang out with him. We started communicating long distance again last summer. Blake broke it off again a few months later, stating that he is still questioning who he is. Is it wrong that we're still friendly? Should I be angrier at Blake?" And she signs her name, "Still there for him in Illinois." The answer, "Dear, still there for him. I don't see why you should be angry with Blake at all. He has been honest with you from the start that he may be bisexual or gay. I can tell you from experience that gay men make wonderful friends. However, if you are romantic about him, I must caution you against trying to change him because you won't be able to do it. He is who he is." And next, "Dear Abby, my daughter and her husband have successful careers, and I am happy for that. But now it seems that she's ashamed of us. We gave her the best we could, and she graduated from college with no debt, thanks to us. We felt it was our responsibility. Now that they earn lots of money, it's like we're not worthy of their company. I have talked to other mothers, and it seems they are treated the same way. I know they have busy lives, but I would like some consideration if I am sick or have surgery. Where did I go wrong? Signed, Anonymous Mom in Alabama." Dear Mom, not knowing you and your friends or their children, it's hard to say, but if I had to hazard a guess, it would be that you gave too much and raised children who grew up with an overinflated sense of entitlement and no sense of gratitude. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the July 7th issue of the Decatur Herald Review. Please stay tuned.